Okay. Here we go. So, I got to be honest with you, this one is going to be a difficult one. And the reason it's a difficult one is because I've been working on this one for 20 years. And while I am definitely in a different space than I was 20 years ago, I'm not even close. So that makes this difficult because Pirkei Avos says, Na'eh Doresh. Oh, we're in Hilchos Deos, by the way. We're in Perek Bet. We're about to start Halacha Dalet. Okay, Halacha Dalet, even though in a moment we're going to go back to a piece in Halacha Gimel. The Pirkei Avos, it says, Na'eh Doresh v'na'eh Mekayem. It's pleasant to us all. Come grab a seat, Daniel. It's pleasant to us all when it's nice when a person preaches when he does what he says. It's hard to hear someone preach, you know, when they talk the talk but they don't walk the walk. So I'm being honest here. This is a tough one, okay? And it will become apparent quite quickly. Le'olam yarbe adam b'shtika. A person should always just learn how to listen, learn how to be quiet. It doesn't even say learn how to listen. That's a different art, which I'm also working on, right? It's just the value of silence, okay? And v'lo yedaber, ela o bedavar chochma, o bedvarim shetzrech lehem l'chayei gufo. And a person, you shouldn't, in an ideal, everything you say, every word has purpose, right? I mean, think about it, okay? Everything you're given in this world is a gift. These hands are a gift, okay? You know, we make a netilat yadayim, and you make a motzi. And before you make a motzi, you go and you wash your hands, right? And if you ask most people, and you can experiment with this if you want, meet a friend from another yeshiva, and just innocently ask them, what does it mean, like the bracha of al netilat yadayim? And what will they tell you, most probably? The prayer on the washing of the hands. That's what they'll tell you, right? And right, before you make a motzi, right. And they will be wrong. Because the word for washing is not netilah. The word for washing is rechitza. Okay? And it's related to tvilah. And you can look this up in the end of Shemot when it talks about the kohanim washing their hands. It doesn't say netilim, right? So what is netilah? What is litol? Anybody know? To take. Notel is a concept that relates to carrying on Shabbat. So why do we make a bracha on the carrying of the hands? Well, that's because the hands represent everything you do in this world. And the bread that you're about to eat represents everything you accomplished in this world. Right? When Adam Arishon is kicked out of Gan Eden, right? So it says, "Bezeyata pecha tochal lechem." From now on, by the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat bread. Thorns and thistles are going to grow for you. In other words, you're going to have to work for what you want to get in this world. And that's actually a bracha. It's not so good to get things that you don't have to work for them. You pay for it in other ways. When you achieve something, when you really worked hard and you earn something, you feel better about it. Right? It's just better. So, shh. Right? It's just better. Right? So what is the lechem that you earn? So the Sfasema says, the Ger Rebbe says, there are two types of lechem, the two types of bread. There's lechem in Aretz, lechem bread that comes from the ground, and there's lechem in Hashamayim. And I'm sure we've spoken about this, but maybe not, no? Lechem, yeah, no? Lechem in
Every time you ask us, like, you're starting from a different point, so we don't know.
We don't know. Okay, that's cool. If nothing else, it reminds you, and then you put two and two together, but Lechem min hashamayim is very simple. Lechem min hashamayim, bread from the heaven, right? First of all, just so you understand why bread represents what we get in this world, the Gemara says that there are 10 processes for making bread, okay? Right? There are 10 different malachot that we don't do on Shabbat, right? First, I have to sow the field, I have to plow the field, I have to reap, I have to thresh, I have to winnow, I have to sift. Eventually, I take the dough and I knead it and I bake it, and finally, I have bread. It's a lot of work. That's why, by the way, the bracha of a motzi is 10 words. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, amotzi lechem min haaretz. Right? 10 words. Representing the 10 processes. Very difficult. A lot of work has to happen in order for you to sit and eat a piece of bread. And we don't appreciate this, right? That's why the highest level of bracha is bread. Although that's not quite enough of an answer, but that's for another time, right? And so bread represents everything we accomplish in this world. In fact, that's one of the reasons why some communities use that blessing to count for a minion. Right? You know, you don't count a human being. A person should never be a number. We learned in our generations just how easy it is to turn a person into a number. Never turn a person to a number, right? So if you're going to count somebody, like maybe you notice this on a bus in a tour, so I'll count your ear or something like that, right? That's a conscious decision not to view you as a number. So what do you do when you have to count and see if you have enough guys for a minion? So they, you know, Shiata Mecha, they come up with a pasuk. So one of them, you walk into shul one day and someone says, oh, Amotzi. You know what he's talking about? You know, you're number six in the minion or whatever, right? So bread represents everything we can accomplish in the world, all the work that goes into it. But just because I have bread sitting on that table doesn't mean that I've tilled the soil. You know? For example, think about it. I mean, I'm married and I have children, and there's not much bread in this world that's better than that. To find the right person in your life, to be married, to be happily married, to be happily married with healthy children, Baruch Hashem, Bli Yad Hara, that's bread. But that's not bread from the earth. That's bread from heaven. That's just a gift. You couldn't do enough in this world to earn that. You know? If you have a close relationship with your parents, if you love them, if you're here for the year and it hits you one day, like I'm living in 2009 and I get to do this. And 70 years ago, they dreamed. I mean, they were in a bunker in the Warsaw Ghetto. They couldn't imagine that you could just do this. That's bread from heaven. Okay? And then there's bread from the earth, bread that you work really hard to achieve. Right? And that's why, by the way, on Shabbat we have two loaves. Right? Because we have to appreciate that there's lechem in Eretz and lechem in Hashemayim, and the truth is they're really one. Right? But that's another discussion. Okay? So you have this bread that you earn, right? And before you eat the bread that you earn, you take your hands. There's even a Kabbalistic idea that you look at your hands before and after you wash them. Because these are the vehicles whereby I bring bread into this world. Right? This is how I make my bread. Am I happy with the way I make my bread? Right? Have I taken that seriously enough? Do I appreciate that? You can get to a place with a lot of different ways. Am I happy with the way I got there? This is like a difficult question. I mean, I don't know. I've been thrashing this around since we started a writer, you know, like I want to get somewhere and I want to get there with you. And sometimes you find out that where you wanted to get to isn't really where you should be going because someone needs something different. Are you always sure that it's the right way? You know, somebody here, like I parked near the dorms this morning. So I thought, okay, I'll do a walk by because I know that there's a few guys here who really want to be here and it's hard to get up. So I figured I'll do a mitzvah. I find that person to be one of the most difficult mitzvot associated with the raita because I'm never really sure that a person doesn't resent it and it's a hard feeling, but it definitely comes out of love. Whether you receive it out of love is another question. But am I sure that I did? Like I want a guy to be in Hilchos Tehillim. Am I sure that that's the best way to do it? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should scream at a guy. Maybe I should tell a guy, if you're not up in the morning, you're doing 100 push-ups or we're going to call your mom. I don't know, some ridiculous whatever, right? You don't know. It's a very difficult question. So Chazal wanted you to think about that all the time. They want you to think about that not just at the end of the year, all the time. You know, I have an employee and maybe I think that employee needs to do something different and I got to get there. Am I sure I did that the right way? Did I handle that the right way? Very difficult, right? So al nitilat yadayim. I don't know how we get. Oh, so what do you do when you finish washing your hands until you get to the bread? You don't talk. That's why if you notice it, all right, they're like, you know, we'll do a niggun because it's easier not to talk and whatever. You can stay focused. Why don't you talk? Why don't you talk? Right?
You know, somebody was telling us that that's not a true minig, and that you're not supposed to talk between something else.
No. You're supposed to focus on the mitzvah. You can talk about the mitzvah. It's not like you're not allowed to talk at all. It's just they don't want you to get disturbed from.
Right.
You're supposed to wash your hands and think about the mitzvah of Hamotzi. If you're not thinking about the mitzvah of Hamotzi and you're talking about something else, then it's like as if you lost like your kavana.
So he is 100% right. The Ben Ish Chai talks about that. In fact, I was once at my Rosh Yeshiva's table, and the salt was at the other end. And he was trying to signal the salt, and nobody got what he was saying. So finally he said, please pass the salt. Because why are you wanting the salt? You're wanting the salt to put it on the bread, and that's part of the mitzvah. Right? And yet it's interesting. There's an idea that comes from the Rush, that's actually mentioned in the Zohar, that whenever the Jewish people accept a custom that's not really halacha, don't don't think they're just wrong. They're sensing something. There's a mystical reason that we need to receive that custom. The best example I could think of, what is the best example of something that wasn't really halacha, it's a custom, and the Jewish people accepted it pretty much wholeheartedly? Kippah. Kippah is not very good. Kippah is not halacha, although now the Shulchan Aruch says it's already minag halacha. It's as close to halacha as you get. Everybody has to wear a kippah, right? It's not that they were making a mistake. It's not that, oh, that's silly, you don't have to do that. German Jews who, the older German Jews, still sometimes go to business and they don't wear a kippah, and they're halachically allowed to do that because that wasn't the minhag of their community. But there's something mystical about that because the Jewish people sense that we need the kippah. So it's the same thing. The fact that you'll find people who are very learned, Rosh Yeshiva, who are doing things like this, right? I believe, whether consciously or subconsciously, it comes from this. That's the only time in the week, except when you're during tefillah, which is a different discussion, where you actually get to experience not talking. And the question is, do you utilize that, right? Le'olam yarbe adam b'shtika v'lo yedaber elo b'dvar chochma b'dvarim sh'tzrich lehem l'chayi gufo. It goes, by the way, a stage further, and I'll tell you a story. During the second intifada, there was a very difficult... lean back for a second, do me a favor. See, now he's got the lean back seat, right? He figured out this doesn't work, right? Yeah, I keep leaning you back. Right? Oh, well, now I can see you. I can really make fun of you. So, during the second intifada, there was a period, it was a terrible period where just every week there was a different bus bombing. I don't know if you remember this. You were probably in grade school. And the straw that broke the camel's back was the Park Hotel bombing. You may remember that on the night of the Seder, suicide bomber walked into the Park Hotel in Netanya and blew himself up and killed some 30 people. It was horrendous. I had actually been at a bris in the Park Hotel like maybe a couple months earlier with my cousin, and so you could visualize it. And there's a lower area in the middle of the big hall where there were tables, and it was sort of surrounded by a low banister. It was kind of beautiful. And it was just, it was like people were slipping because there was so much blood on the floor. And I met one of the families who was there, the Tamimi's family, who lost their husband, the security guard in the hotel. And that was just it. That was just it. So finally the Israeli army decided enough was enough, and they launched what was called Mivtza Chomat Magen. Chomat Magen in English is, I think, defensive shield. Basically, they had to go back in. They had given up their, security in the territories, and they were letting the Palestinians... Yeah, Yudav Shomron in Aza. They were basically allowing the Palestinian police, Palestinian Authority to patrol, and it wasn't working. And they were in collaboration. I'm not going to get into the politics. So they went in. There was a major draft. Many reserve soldiers were drafted. And for the next 4 to 6 weeks, they basically had to rout out terror cells, bomb-making factories, guns. It was unbelievable what was going on there. And one of the hotbeds was Jenin. Jenin had become pretty much the center for Hamas terror and Palestinian terror, Palestinian Authority terror in the territories. And so they went in there. So one day, about 4 or 5 days into the fighting, Shaul Mufaz, who was then the chief of staff of the Israeli army, came to do an inspection. You know, he was sort of having a briefing with some of his commanders, and he noticed that one of his commanders, who was actually, a brigade commander, Avram Gutman, had a rip in his shirt. So that's, like, surprising. Like, it may seem like a little detail, you know, like you're in the field, you're fighting, whatever. But if you're in a briefing, you got a brigade commander and his shirt is ripped, it's not appropriate. Like, sends a message to the men, you just don't do that. So he walked over to me, he said, well, what's with the ripped shirt? Like, you should change your shirt. So he saw Gutman hesitating, and so somebody said, well, he buried his mother yesterday. Yesterday was his mother's funeral, and he's dati, he has a kippah on his head. And so there's a halacha that when you bury someone of your close relatives that you love, you do what's called kriya, you rip the shirt. So Mufaz looks at him, he says, kavalta timcha etmol, you buried your mother, right? And he says, yeah. He says, go home. What are you doing here? Go sit shiva, we'll manage. So Avram Gutman again hesitates, and he says, well, I need to be here with my men. And Mufaz says, look, if you're sitting shiva, it's okay. You can go home, we'll manage. So he says to him, look, he says, when I heard that Chomat Magen was happening, So, you know, he was already at the age, he didn't really need to be there, right? But he immediately went because he just wouldn't allow his unit to go without him. He's a brigade commander. So he volunteered, showed up in the base, and joined his men to lead them into combat. And the afternoon of the first day of fighting, second afternoon, he got a call from his mother. Now, his mother knew, his family knows, not to interrupt him, not to call him when he's in the field. You're a brigade commander. You're a brigade commander. This was before that, right? That would be a good story, but no, right? You're a brigade commander. Like, he doesn't call to interrupt whatever. So he figured it must be important. So he picks up his cell phone, and his mother gets on the phone, and she says, "Listen, Avram," she says, "I want to tell you two things. One, I want to tell you that you have a responsibility to make sure your men get home safely." "Okay, Jewish mother." "And two, I want to tell you, just remember that you are my revenge against the Nazis." His mother had been a Holocaust survivor. And he said, "Okay," and she hung up. It's a weird call. And that afternoon, he got news that she had collapsed, and by the time he got there, she was dead. And the next day, they had the funeral, and people noticed that he had a very grim, determined look on his face. And when they finished burying his mother, he told his family that he was going to go back to the field because he felt that his mother had left him one last mitzvah to do, that she had wanted him to do that. Right? And that was it. He didn't talk about it. There are certain moments where there's just not what you have to say. There's just what you have to do. And sometimes, and I remind you, I struggle with this, but sometimes we talk too much. And because we talk too much, we get distracted from what we have to do. You know, sometimes you spend a lot of time talking about all the things you want to do and the projects you want to have. And sometimes you just got to do them. You know, it's true with everything in life. You know, I mean, for you guys, I mean, you're here. And you came here because there's stuff you want to do. And it's tough to decide, like, what you want to do. I mean, I think probably the most important thing a person can do in his day is to ask himself at the beginning of his day, what do I really want to accomplish today? Too often we just go through our day, and we just never thought about that. Like, we're in the routine, you know, we're here, we go to shir, we go to whatever. Okay, that's nice. What do I want to accomplish? What do I want to finish my day saying, I got this done? Whatever this is. You know? And the ability to do that, it usually comes in moments of silence. And I want to tell you that one of the most powerful moments of my day for me personally is when I wake up in the morning and I have that quiet time, I say modani and then I just have some silence. Like, what do I appreciate and what do I want to do? Changes the nature of my day. And I think maybe that's what the Rambam is talking about here. Now let me ask you a question. Right? Does that make sense? Now let me ask you a question. Why is this following Halacha Gimel? If you could summarize for me what the third Halacha that we did yesterday, in the last couple of days, says, what would that Halacha say? And therefore, why does this, getting into the value of silence, follow that? Okay, right? Does that make sense? Anger and arrogance, I wouldn't say they're solved. But the easiest way to begin the journey to dealing with anger is silence. If you think about, I mean, tell me why. You tell me what you think. Well, what do you really think? Like, you know, besides what we talked about, like, what do you really think anger is? Like, why do you get angry? Think of a moment that you get angry and ask yourself, like, what is anger? Like, really? What do you think it is? Like, does anybody here think that after yesterday's halacha, we're done, we all know we have to not be angry and we're just going to work on it? I mean, can anybody here honestly say that in the next 3 weeks they're not really going to get angry at something? I mean, I got angry with my kids this morning. And I spent the car ride to school apologizing to them. You know, I came down, there was stuff all over the place, they didn't clean up breakfast. And I reamed them a little bit, and I don't do that often, so when I do that, it's like really serious. Like, they were really shocked, and my daughter got upset, and she started tearing, and you know, and they're right. I mean, you know, it's legitimate for me to say, like, you can put your breakfast away, but to get upset about it, it's just silly. And they're working so hard, and she's preparing for her high school exams, and I just felt bad the whole way. So, you know, we talk, we hug, kiss, blah, 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 right? What is anger? Like, what is anger? Where does that come from? What do you think anger is? Why do you think we get stuck in it? Yeah?
Anger is like a lack of belief that everything that happens is like Hashem's plan.
Ooh. Oh, that's a good question. So it's self-oriented.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's self-oriented, more like.
Well, before you go, did everybody hear that?
What is anger?
So Misha was saying that anger. I just want to be sure I got this right. Sorry. Misha is saying that anger, like anger is related to, at least, tell me if I got this right, the fact that you don't see that everything is Hashem's plan. And then Carl was saying, well, what about someone who doesn't believe in Hashem? Like they, there are people who don't get angry who don't believe in God, right? Is that right? And then you were saying what?
It's when you see something that you disagree with, like if someone's doing something that
you see something you don't like.
Something happening that you don't think should be happening.
Right, well, seeing something you don't think should be happening, I don't know if that's the cause of anger. Maybe that's the symptom. What were you going to say, Shlomo?
I think it's more something in the sense like you're angry at yourself. Because like, it's like hard for me to describe. Like when you get really angry, it's like you're viewing something and it really bothers you.
But why?
Yeah.
So clearly you're bothered.
Yeah, clearly you're very bothered. But like in a sense when you're letting out that anger, it's like, you're just like, why am I so bothered by this?
Anger kind of is arrogance in the same sense.
Ooh.
Because when you get angry about something, you feel like that shouldn't have happened to you, or that shouldn't have happened to, like, when you see something, like, let's say, like, Rob did something that made me really angry right now. Why am I getting angry about it? Because he did it to me, or...
But that's not always the case. You'll see something that is, it doesn't affect you at all.
How does that
make you really angry?
You can see like a terrorist or something that makes you really angry, but at
yeah,
the same time,
on the roof, like
at the same time, you feel like the terrorist did something that maybe Jewish.
Yeah, like, I think it's like your Israeli something that like offends your core values, not necessarily. Like,
what are your core values? Like, where
well, let's say you have a good core value. Like, let's say you have a core value that people should respect each other. Could we all agree that that's a good core value? Like, every human being should respect every other human being, right?
No.
No? You don't think that's a good core value?
There's definitely people who shouldn't be respected.
Ooh, now that's an interesting question. Before we go there, that's an interesting question, because I'm not so sure I agree. In fact, I disagree. What I was saying is let's assume a core value is everybody should respect everybody. So Moshe was saying, well, aren't there people you... Well, or he's opinioning that there are people you shouldn't respect. I'll get back to that. Let's say for the moment that you have a core value that you should respect another human being. And so what you're saying is anger is that I see someone completely disrespecting another human being and it makes me angry. So then that should be a good thing. That's not really arrogance.
It is.
But it is. Why?
Because he's breaking your value that you believe should be kept. It's still hurting you in a way. It's kind of suffering.
Well, give an example. Let's put Aaron to the test. Okay, somebody breaks your phone charger?
By accident, yeah.
Okay, by accident. How does that offend your core value? I don't think this is the
one.
One second, what's it?
Core value.
How does it break your head?
you have a core value that respect other people's things.
That is a core value.
The reason you're getting mad
is an accident.
Hang on.
If someone
right,
breaks my...
Wait.
You can't have two conversations. One second, yeah?
It's not... If someone breaks something of yours, you're not getting angry because you have a core value that people should respect each other's stuff. You're getting angry because it's your stuff.
Okay.
So obviously, you care a lot.
People should respect my
stuff. What would be the difference?
You care a lot more if someone is
so, one second. What would be the difference? What would be the difference between it being about somebody broke your stuff and that someone shouldn't break stuff? What would be the difference? No, no, no. What would be the difference?
Whether it's yours.
My focus is on you and my focus is on the someone.
And what would be the practical difference in that?
If you care about the someone that people should work with, then you'll try to make people break stuff. That's why you just care about yourself.
If you're upset.
Selfish.
Pardon?
Anger is being selfish.
Okay, so if you're upset. Look, I'll only say for me. If I'm upset that someone's, let's say, not in Hilchot Deot Shir, because it offends me, right? That should be different from being upset that someone is in Hilchot Deot Shir because I care about them. I'll give you an easy example. That's exactly the point. If I walk into the dorm and the guy's in bed at 8:30 in the morning, right? If it's all about me, I'll get angry. Now, I'm willing sometimes, and I find this a very difficult thing to do, to pretend that I'm angry. And by the way, like every other human being, you know, sometimes I succeed and sometimes I fail. You know, I've at least gotten to the point where when I fail, I take the time to think about the fact that I failed and why I failed, right? But I'll do something, and I actually just did that, right? But the difference for me between the experience of asking someone to get out of bed at 8:30 when it's about me and asking someone to get out of bed at 8:30 when it's about them is exactly whether I'm angry. By the way, the person in bed may not know that because I may decide that a person, you know, just needs to experience some anger, which is what the Rambam said in Halacha Gimel. He said sometimes you feel you're a parnas. A parnas means someone responsible for the community to some degree. So I'm a parnas in this community, right? For whatever the reason, right?
So,
a parnas is somebody responsible for the community, right? So that's the fundamental difference. Now, by the way, that's huge. Because that means that, well, you tell me that there's a recipe there, and Carl, you tell me if you agree with this, there's a recipe there for how to deal with anger. What's the recipe then for how to deal with anger? Does that make sense what I just said?
Yeah.
So far?
Where's the recipe?
Pardon? We'll get into it in a minute. What? Not don't make things all about you, but make it about them. Now, what does that mean to make it about them? Why are they more important than me? They're not more important than me, right?
But if you make it about them, you're less likely to get angry because really getting angry is selfish. And if you're getting angry about somebody else, it's harder to get angry.
That could be. But why should I get be more focused on someone else than about me?
Because it's more... Right.
Aren't I just as important?
Well, because if you focus on someone else and look at it in their shoes, then you're less likely to get angry. And when you get angry, it negatively affects yourself. So therefore, you're in effect helping yourself out by looking at it in their shoes.
Well, what's the question? What's the question that allows me to determine that I want to be reacting because I care about another and not because I care about myself? Like, what's at the root of that? Pardon? Right, that's true, if I'm asking why I'm angry, but here I'm not coming up with a legitimate answer. I'm not asking questions to see what the answer is. I have an agenda to get to an answer. I want it not to be about me, right? I mean, no? Yeah? Yeah, Arye? Pardon? Whether it's productive anger or not? Okay, could be. Yeah. There's certainly a huge difference in the experience about caring for someone else and caring about me, right? Why would I care about someone else? Like, I understand why I care about me, because I'm me, right? But why would I care about someone else? So you don't care about someone else. Why should you care about someone else? Why? So you don't care about someone else. I come into the dorms at 1 o'clock in the morning. Baruch Hashem, this is not something I have to do, and maybe never will. But I come into the dorms at 1 in the morning, and I don't know. Moshe's trying to get to sleep because he's excited. He's going to Vatican tomorrow morning. He wants to be in the basement at 6, right? And I don't know.
I think it'd be easier to stay up for Vatican than get up for it.
Oh, okay, that could be. All right. So then Moshe has decided he's staying up because he wants to go to Vatican. And Josh, he's a gabba. He wants to be up in the morning, so he's asleep. And Moshe's blaring his music. And I come in and I say, Moshe, how can you do that? You're going to wake up Josh. And Moshe says, but I'm enjoying the music. I say, yeah, but Josh won't enjoy the music. I say, well, but if I turn off the music, I won't be enjoying the music. Why should I suffer at his expense? I think I'm more important.
I make a valid point.
That's right, you do. So what makes that wrong? Do you understand the question?
It's common law between man and man.
Let's say common law is wrong. I don't like common law. Does this remind you of a discussion we once had?
And then you're lonely.
Yeah, could be. So it's only practical. The only reason to do that and to be nice is because it's practically smart. But what if it's not practically smart? What if I'm not lonely? What if that music is really important to me?
If you don't care about
then Josh
it,
didn't well, consider it
for one second.
I don't know if there's a pinpoint why, but like you will not be happy because you don't care about you.
So it's practical. The only reason to care about others is because they care about me.
No.
But if one second, but if they don't care about me, or if I don't care about them, so practically people won't care about me. So let's say I don't care. Yeah?
I think Josh would be inconsiderate by going to sleep.
So I don't want to be considerate. Why do I have to be considerate?
Josh would be inconsiderate by
going there you go. That's right.
Right now, in your living space, in your room, you have to be able to live in a situation that's tolerable to you.
So it's just practical. It's not objectively right. There's no objective right. One second. There's no objective right to being a mensch to someone else. It just practically makes sense. But if it practically doesn't make sense, if I'm on an airplane and I have my space, you ever be on an airplane? I mean, you guys don't fly that often. I call this the elbow fight. You know, like you're sitting in a seat and the person next to you, and there's only one room for one elbow. Okay? And you got to use the elbow and he's got to use the elbow, right? And sometimes you get a guy who sits next to you and he's just determined to the elbow. So then he, you know, I recently had this happen to me on a flight. I recently had this happen to me on a flight. I was sitting there and I like to work on my laptop and I got all work done. And it's very hard, but he's sitting there. He's got the elbow. So I'm like this. Then he got up to go to the bathroom. I figured, okay, great. So now I got the elbow, right? I'm the new king, right? I come back and we start to get into this thing. Okay, like he puts this thing down and then he starts pushing it whenever. And that's like when somebody's trying to cut you off when you're driving. So there's this instinct that you're going to show him who's... And then fortunately you're not three and you catch yourself and you decide, this is just not worth it. This is just silly. I'll be a mensch. I'm the guy people hate driving behind. Because I always let the guy who's signaling in. Because I've never discovered that the 3 seconds has changed my day. And I can always determine how many good drivers there are behind me as to whether or not they honk. Right? So I just let go. It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. But why? I think that's the objective of the other. Why?
Well, according to traffic theory, that actually helps flow of traffic.
Okay, but then it's practical. So if I don't want to do it, I don't do it. Yeah?
You're asking why you'd like...
Why should you... Why is it the correct thing to do to be nice to your fellow? Misha, by the way, has the answer.
Really?
Yes, because Misha started with the answer. Because at the end of the day, right... If you believe that every human being is created in the image of God, and if you believe, and again, I'm not saying that you have to believe this, and I totally agree with you that there are many people in this world who succeed in being less or not angry, right? But if you want to find an objective reason for this, if Hashem runs the world and Hashem created every human being, right? And the Torah is telling me to do this, which is why the Rambam starts this whole thing with the fact, this is a mitzvah of the Halachta B'Drachav, that's what the Rambam believes, then the reason that I actually have an obligation to consider you is because you're a chelek elokam imal. Hashem created you as a neshama. It's a whole different way of looking at ethics.
But I think that people that don't believe in God still feel an obligation to care about other people.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's just practical.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But where does it come from? You know what Bertrand Russell once wrote? Keep your hand up because I'm going to get to you in a second. Bertram Russell once wrote, he was an avowed atheist, and worth reading some of his work, but he wrote one of his pieces, and I read all this stuff when I was going through my why not be an atheist stage, whatever, and the only reason I didn't become an atheist was because atheism just didn't make sense to me. I didn't believe, and I still don't believe, that you can prove the atheist wrong. It's a waste of energy. But it just didn't make sense to me. There are a lot of logical issues with atheism, but he once said something that really struck me. It was one of the deepest affirmations of Emunah I ever read. He wrote, to believe that the only thing wrong with cruelty is that I don't like it is absurd. He instinctively understood there has to be an objective reason that that's wrong. And he couldn't come up with one because there's no God, so there's no source of objective reason. So he left himself with the question. And I have a whole different opinion as to why a person remains an atheist despite that glaring challenge. But if you do, and by the way, just like that you can't prove the atheist wrong, you can't prove the believer right, and maybe we made up God because it solves our problems, and that could be, and that's a whole other discussion. But at the very least, if you do, there's living a life where the Torah comes from Hashem, it definitely gives you that. Right?
Why is that absurd?
Pardon?
Why is that absurd?
Why is what absurd?
That we have the
feeling that's cool. Oh, so one way of understanding that, well, so the easy way to understand that is that Hashem created us with an instinctive understanding of what's right and wrong. In fact, we were talking about the Shema the other day. So one of the things, you know, you have to learn to listen. What do you have to listen to? One of the things you have to listen to is yourself. You deep inside of you is a voice that always tells you what's right. You just have to get the schmutz out of the way, and you'll know. You'll know. You just know in your neshama. Sometimes people get so blocked up with stuff, they're not listening to the neshama. But deep inside your neshama, you know, I want to tell you something. And then, Aryeh, I want to tell you something. What is this whole process we're going through here? Like, what is all this that we're doing here? We're sitting here for a year, whatever. So we call this education, right? I mean, we're educating ourselves. It's hopefully a different educational process than high school, because hopefully, to some degree, you're here because you want to be here. And we have to find that delicate balance between pulling you, kicking and screaming to what you really want to do. But if you really didn't want to do this, you wouldn't be here, right? On some level, hopefully. So we call this chinuch in Hebrew. So what is chinuch? Right? Did I ever talk to you about this?
Drive.
Chain? No? I must have told you the story. Okay, right. There are three experiences. When I first came to Israelite, that Rabbi Aaron and I, he once heard me telling a story. And he came over to me afterwards and said, did you ever hear me tell that story? I said, no, right? So this is one of them. It's interesting. If he told you a story about a blind date that he was once on, so I have the same, very similar experience, right? You go on a blind date, you meet a girl, it's the only time I ever allowed myself to be on a blind date, ever, right? And my friends bugged me for like 3 months. You got to meet this girl. This girl's for you is unbelievable. And I was like 24 or whatever it was. I wasn't into this. I always thought I'd meet my girl at a party or she or whatever, right? And met her at a party. And but the trick was to figure out who I wanted. I wanted a girl who could go to a party and go to a shir. So you either go to a shir and find a girl who likes to go to a party, or you go to a party and find a girl who likes to go to a shir. So that's what I did. I had more fun at the party. But anyway, so these guys, finally I said, okay, enough. You know what? Fine. I'll meet this girl. I'll go out with her. And it's one of these, like, I'll wear the blue sweater, you wear the red sweater, we'll meet, whatever. And I'm walking down Ben Yehuda Street, and she was supposed to be in front of Cafe Atara, and I see this girl in a red sweater, and I did, like, a double take. I'm like, that, like, can't be, you know, like, my friends couldn't possibly think I'd be interested in this girl. I mean, I know we're supposed to look at the inner beauty of a person and the midot and the character trait, but this was a very tough exterior to get through. Let's put it that way, right? I mean, oof, right? So, hope she never hears this tape. So it was so bad that I was actually going to take off my sweater, throw it in an alley, and tell her that Benny Friedman felt bad he couldn't make it, but he didn't want to stand you up. But, of course, then you get invited to a wedding and sit next to her the next night, so I didn't do that. So I went over to her, hi, I'm Benny, you're whatever, and fine. And so we go into a tower to sit down, and I'm already making my excuses because I know this isn't going anywhere, right? And so Ezra said, I feel so really bad. I got to run somewhere, whatever. But I didn't want you to think that I, whatever. And then I ordered the soup because soup is safe. You can have soup fast or slow like you're covered, but it doesn't feel like you tried to ditch, right? So I ordered the soup, and I'm sitting there. And this girl was, I mean, I'm just not going to put the character in, but it just, whatever. Not like mirror breaking, whatever. And
describe it.
Pardon?
You said you were going to describe it. Mirror breaking, I think, described it.
Describe it. Okay, whatever. No, I mean, it's not nice to say that someone's ugly, but anyway, so whatever. So that was my chisaron, and I figured, like, okay, Hashem is giving me a test and a nisayon to see if I can overcome the external. And look, it's not an accident that you're supposed to appreciate the way someone looks. There's big day kahuna, the kohanim have to dress beautifully, whatever. Everybody has their person who thinks they're beautiful. This one was not my match. So I'm sitting with her and talking. And the truth is, she had a great personality, and she was really funny. And we were having this great conversation, and I was actually enjoying it. And then I figured, okay, this is stupid. I really have nowhere to go. I'm having a good time. I'm not going to be dating this girl, but okay, so what? So I'll have a good time. You know, so I ordered the grilled cheese, right? And I started to think, okay, she's not beautiful, but she's not so ugly, you know? And then, you know, we're having a really good discussion, and I actually started to think she was cute. Now, I didn't think she was gorgeous, By the end of the evening, I actually figured that I have a friend who really should meet this girl, and they ended up getting married. So that's a whole other story. But that only happened to me once, that once, which is why I remember the story so well. But how did that happen? Right? So like Rabbi Aaron told you, that's chen. Chen is inner beauty. Chen is what comes out, right? When you get the muck out of the way. That's what chinuch is. Chinuch is discovering the inner beauty. It's not that a teacher has all this knowledge and he's supposed to give it to you. It's a process whereby you uncover the knowledge that you already have, the beauty that you already have, right? So listening to that inner voice and knowing instinctively inside that something is right or wrong, that's the beauty you have within. But where does that come from? So if you believe that that's a gift from Hashem, then that could be the objectively right thing to do. But if it's not a gift from Hashem, it's just subjective, and you could be right or you could be wrong, and it really doesn't matter, right? And maybe, therefore, what Misha said at the beginning fits. Somebody here wanted to say something. Aryeh? Pardon? I covered it. Okay. That's a rarity, all right? Yeah?
Well, you were talking about what Kriya said about cruelty being wrong because you don't like it, that being absurd. But if you look at it, if you're an atheist and you look at it that way, all life is absurd. If you look at the amount of people that are, the amount of animal and nature that are bipeds, that is a very small fraction of them. If you look at them that have very less hair all over their body in terms of mammals, then humans are absurd. If you want to say it, if you want to play the odds, all life is absurd on some level. This is to put more hold morality up to a different standard than the rest of life is just as absurd.
Well, the Gemara says, first of all, I wouldn't call it absurd. It might be something you struggle with. That's good. I think that goes back to instinct. In other words, Chazal give all sorts of definitions for why human life is different than animal life, which is different from plant life, which is different from the inanimate object, right? And that only makes sense to me. I can only share with you my perspective. That only makes sense to me if, in fact, it is a created difference. But if it's random, if there is no God, then you're right. What's the difference between you and an animal? And that's how you can get people who are more concerned about saving dolphins than they are about saving human beings. Right? That's how a person, and this is an extreme example, but that's how a person can go up to an abortion clinic, right? Because he wants to protect an unborn baby and kill a human being. That's absurd. How do you get there? Because you decide what life is important or what not on a certain level. And by the way, it doesn't matter that some of these people call themselves religious. There's an issue in their relationship with Hashem, right? So I can only share with you, if you remember, this is the theme of this whole year. I'm going to share with you what works for me, what I find meaningful, right? Now you have to decide what to do with that, yeah.
The reason why I respected other men is because of the kindergarten reason. I wouldn't want them to do it to me. So at the same time...
Well, that's very dangerous.
At the same time, it's thinking I can treat them like an awful person, whatever it is, and then I'll get it in return. It's, in my opinion, a bad way of looking at it because it's I personally believe that the more good you do to somebody else, the more good that will be done in return.
Well, but think about this.
When I let somebody into my lane, I usually get let into a lane.
Okay.
Uncanny how well it works.
I agree with you.
They don't let me in.
I agree with you that. It's like they had this project called Pay It Forward. Do you remember this was going around?
I remember that movie, Pay It Forward.
Right? Random acts of loving kindness, right? You know, right? I believe in that. You put it out and the world gives it back to you. I totally believe in that. Having said that, if the essence of morality is I don't do to you what I don't want you to do to me, right? What if I don't mind if you do it to me? What if I'm a sadomasochist and I want you to give me pain? So then it's okay for me to give you pain. But I don't care about that.
Okay, so then what do you care about?
So then basically you can't, there's nothing objectively wrong about that unless there's a source of objective right and wrong. What do you think about it? Let's take one last question and then we'll break. And if anybody has more questions, come on me, yeah?
Well, not everybody.
No? Anybody else? Cool. All right, food for thought. The purpose of this is...
Late to silence, though. We just went on.
Oh, because, very good, because the reason that silence is following arrogance and anger is because arrogance and anger is all about the fact. Think about it, right? That it becomes about me, right? It's all about the fact, you know, what anger does is it blocks out the fact that it's not about me. What allows you to get back to the fact that it's about me? That's silence, learning to listen, rediscovering the inner voice, by the way, not just in you, but in the person next to you. Ooh, food for thought. Boker Tov, everybody. Shkach.